It's a politics show broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory in UBC's Point Grey campus. I'm with my co-host Ajit.
What's up?
And I'm your host Spencer Latu. And we have a special guest this evening. We have special guest comrade Kyle Mikuluk joining us. Say hi to everybody, Kyle.
Comrade Kyle here. Yo, yo.
And for today's show, we are speaking truth to power about the Wet'suwet'en crisis going on in northern British Columbia, the Canadian media's obsession with China as of late, and Venezuela, the new dog whistle for I hate socialism. But before we get to all that, I would like to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the unceded territory of the Coast Salish peoples, including the territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. And rather than keeping this as a tokenistic gesture to the Indigenous peoples of Canada, as is generally done on UBC's campus, we will keep the Indigenous struggle for self-determination and justice at the forefront of our consciousness. We will begin this show and every show until there is justice for Indigenous people, talking about colonialism. So we've been covering this pretty closely over the weeks since the Canadian government police force, the RCMP, stormed their way into Wet'suwet'en territory onto unceded land that the Delgamuukw decision in the Canadian Supreme Court determined that it was actually under, it was governed by the hereditary chiefs of the Wet'suwet'en people that have governed since time immemorial. So it's very clear who's in charge there. But since Coastal GasLink wants to build a pipeline now, oh, who's in charge? We don't know anymore. Maybe it's the reserve that's many kilometers away from them and controls all only 1% of the territory. And maybe we should deal with those people because they accepted our $13 million bribe. So it's a very, very sad situation. We're seeing the mask off, as the 21st century philosopher Future coined the term. We're seeing the mask off of the RCMP as the literal guard dogs of capital, as a recent report told us that they only are concerned with how much public support and sympathy can Indigenous groups get. That's what they are more concerned with than their criminality, because once again, they are the guard dogs of capital and are merely concerned with serving their corporate masters, Coastal GasLink, TransCanada, Kinder Morgan, and the like. That's why they lock up old people who are protesting in Burnaby. They have no souls and are just going to arrest anybody that's trying to not make everyone die from climate change. So in this update from the Wet'suwet'en territory, we're talking about Wet'suwet'en complaints about pipeline builder to be probed by government police. So this is from CBC.ca, and that very ambiguous headline talks about how the Wet'suwet'en say trap lines and tents destroyed and the archaeological impact assessment not yet done. So this was put out by the Canadian Press, posted January 29th. What we have is a nice picture of a bulldozer and some police standing by. So they're bulldozing through Wet'suwet'en territory, not just in their attempt to shove the Coastal GasLink pipeline down their throats, but also literally with bulldozers, big cat bulldozers. So the article reads,
shameful.
Very shameful. And if anyone ever had any positive thoughts about the RCMP, if they got your bike back after somebody stole it from you, or they got your cat down from a tree, or whatever they're supposed to be doing, just know that in this territory, they're there merely to serve the corporation. So the article reads, the British Columbia government says it will inspect the site of a planned natural gas pipeline southwest of Houston, British Columbia, following allegations that the company building the project is violating its permits. Members of the Wet'suwet'en Nation and supporters have alleged that Coastal GasLink is engaging in construction activity without an archaeological impact assessment and also destroyed trap lines and tents unnecessarily. The Ministry of Energy, Mines, and Petroleum Resources says in a statement that joint site inspection will be conducted by the province's Environmental Assessment Office and the BC Oil and Gas Commission next week. We anticipate that it will take some time subsequently to determine whether any non-compliances are evident, and if so, the appropriate enforcement action, the ministry said. The RCMP also said it has received complaints from both the Office of the Wet'suwet'en and Coastal GasLink regarding trap lines and the removal of personal property items. Quote, we are following up on all complaints and continue to facilitate ongoing and direct dialogue between all parties regarding various issues, unquote, the RCMP said. We'll take a break from the article, and I'd like to lodge a complaint. Can you stop being the guard dogs of capital? Because it's really sick that we waste our federal tax dollars on these disgusting human beings that are serving in a fascistic fashion the corporations that are going to plunge humanity into the end of organized human life. So the contradictions in this whole scenario are too great to even begin to deal with, but it's ironic that the people who are viewed the lowest in our society, indigenous people, are the ones fighting the most ardently for our existence. We treat them like garbage every day. People say racist stuff about them casually. It's totally not totally okay in our society to say really horrible things about Native people. And it's really bad in our society to say bad things about the police, even though the police are doing legit bad things. So lots of contradictions there. Ajit, do you have any thoughts on this update of the of Coastal GasLink destroying trap lines and going ahead with construction before the archaeological impact assessment has been done?
I mean, it just kind of demonstrates that in their mind that they don't have to go through any of the necessary processes or anything. In their idea, they're already in the right.
Prior and informed consent.
Right, exactly.
Totally unheard of by these people.
No, and, you know, in their mind, they got the freedom to go bulldoze whatever sort of objects which are in their way or whatnot. And even though it wasn't like a massive destruction, just the fact that, you know, it's they're just inching closer to that.
Kyle, any thoughts on this story so far?
Well, you know, mercenaries masquerading as public servants, you know, these fuckers.
Yep. Very well said. So going back to the article, Gidmonton say three tents bulldozed. The article reads, TransCanada owned Coastal GasLink is working to build a natural gas pipeline from northeastern British Columbia to LNG's export facility on the coast as a part of a $40 billion project. Members of the Gidmonton clan of the Wet'suwet'en Nation issued a statement Monday saying the company, quote, willfully, illegally, and violently destroyed its property this weekend, while the company said its actions have been permitted and lawful. Jen Wickham, a member of the Gidmonton clan, said Coastal GasLink bulldozed three tents constructed with timber and canvas in an area along a logging road not included in the company's plans. Quote, CGL workers just tore down all our stuff, threw them in shipping containers, and said we had until the end of the day to pick them up or they would be thrown in the dump, she said. The tents were constructed when members erected a barrier at the same location, where RCMP enforced a court injunction on January 7th and arrested 14 people in a move that sparked protests across Canada and internationally. Wickham said Wet'suwet'en members told RCMP they wanted the tents to remain to host cultural workshops. Following the enforcement of the court injunction, a road was plowed around the tents, allowing free movement of vehicles. Coastal GasLink said in a statement that all work it's doing is, quote, approved and permitted and in full compliance, unquote, with its environmental assessment certificate issued by the province, and the company has met all required pre-construction conditions. Quote, these areas are active work zones that are lawful and permitted. Any obstruction impeding our crews from safely accessing these work zones is in contravention of a court order, end quote. Coastal GasLink said. A lot to unpack there. It's pretty obvious that this is like pretty petty retaliation by these people because they feel foolish that, you know, these like quote unquote savages, and I'm only saying quote unquote because that's what the RCMP often referred to them as in their Facebook group, that they would say really horrible things about Indigenous people, as we covered on the show before. That's what it reeks of to me. There is no other reason to bulldoze tents. They were going to do the really horrible thing of hosting cultural workshops. But of course, the RCMP would view that as a threat to them. And for whatever reason, Coastal GasLink, owned by TransCanada, is not a threat to them. Not through anything like climate catastrophe or anything, huh? Huh, Ajit?
No. Sorry, just to clarify, the trap lines were being employed by the Wet'suwet'en as a mode of protest, right?
We'll get to the trap lines in the next bit. We'll stick to the tents for just a hot second.
Sure.
They put them in shipping containers, said they'd be thrown in the dump if they didn't do it. They plowed a road around the tents, allowing free movement of vehicles. But you can't have free movement of Indigenous people on their own land. Mm-hmm. What kind of sick society is this? Mm-hmm. That's what really, really kind of blows
capitalist
my mind.
Capitalist freedom. That's yes. What that is. You know,
capitalist freedom. Jeez. By Karl Marx, you can work until you die, right, or you can starve. That is freedom under capitalism.
Freedom of choice.
Freedom of choice. Working or starving. Doesn't sound like freedom to me.
Freedom for machines, but not freedom for people.
No, freedom for capital. freedom for capital.
Who deserves rights?
We can build factories all over the world, and that's freedom. But people can't leave their own countries that are destroyed by the United States.
Then they arrested 14 people.
And then they arrested 14 people on their own land. It's kind of wild, you know. Imagine if RCMP tried to arrest people in America. That wouldn't go over well. That's not their land. That's not their nation.
This problem is systemic, though. My understanding is like close to a majority of all incarcerated individuals in Canada are of indigenous descent.
Oh, well, huge proportion.
This is
not a majority, but
no,
like
close to at least 40%, my understanding. And like the
federal prisons, a quarter of the population, 24%. In the prairies, in the prairie prisons, like the provincial ones, they make up close to half.
Women,
it's more than half.
But like the police are just used to just incarcerating these people.
It's just second nature for them.
They don't, like, it's systematic.
And there's no cost. If these were 14 white people, if there's 14 white people protesting, free speech, or if there were these 14 MAGA hat wearing kids at the Lincoln Memorial talking smack to women at an anti-abortion rally, the world would cry.
Imagine they're trying to build a road through like Kerrisdale and like 14 Kerrisdale residents are arrested.
14 boomers arrested. We'll get to the trap lines now, Ajit. So trap lines in dispute. The article reads, on Friday, Coastal GasLink said it stopped work in an area closer to its planned work site because trap lines had been placed inside construction boundaries and people were entering the site, raising safety concerns. Jason Slade, a supporter with the nearby Unistoten camp run by Wet'suwet'en members, said Monday that work only halted temporarily and the trap lines had been destroyed. He said excavation had begun at the site of a planned man camp. The Unistoten alleged the actions violate the Wildlife Act by interfering with lawful trapping, as well as an agreement that the Wet'suwet'en hereditary clan chiefs had reached with RCMP, allowing the company access to the area and ensuring traditional practices like trapping could continue. The clan also alleges it's violating its permits with the BC Oil and Gas Commission and Environmental Assessment Office by beginning construction work before an archaeological impact assessment has been complete. In a letter to the commission on Friday, Chief Nadibas of the Unistoten clan points to an affidavit filed by a company official in November as part of its court injunction application, saying the assessment is scheduled for May. Nadibas asks in the letter that a stop work order be issued immediately while the allegations are investigated. That's the end of the article. There's a lot to unpack here again. So man camps, I know this is kind of a passing detail in the article, but man camps have been linked to a spike in murdered and missing Indigenous women in the area, crime, assaults. So
prostitution, I imagine.
Yeah, all kinds of problems that come with this kind of stuff. So you see it all up in Fort McMurray, tons of problems there. As soon as DAPL, the Dakota Access Pipeline, was pushed through, there was man camps, and then immediately Indigenous women became murdered and missing, Indigenous women and girls. So I think that's an important, and a symbolic gesture that the Coastal GasLink company, well, TransCanada and its subsidiary Coastal GasLink, are destroying Indigenous traditional practices like trapping, and they're replacing it instead with a man camp that is going to put Indigenous women and girls in danger.
But can't you see the high-quality jobs offered by this pipeline? Like, come on.
Yeah, they're going to be the top
living
10.
In a man camp?
Yeah, like, living in a man camp.
Like, yo, that quality is probably awesome. It's probably like a hotel. Like, no wonder they're murdering women. I'm totally being sarcastic.
It's horrible.
Anybody doesn't
and
notice,
it's actually legitimately a dangerous job. It's one of these pipeline building jobs are in the top 10 most dangerous jobs in the world.
Right, and like, you're freezing your butt off every day. You're resorting to alcohol after work, I imagine. And, there's no family life around, so what do you resort to? And of course, a lot of these minority programmed due to social nature to look down upon Indigenous
jobs.
Women.
And look, yeah,
they took our jobs.
Yeah, this is more. Gee, you bring up a good point that we're only compounding the problem by taking our unfortunately really retrograde, horrible society and transplanting that into indigenous, like right next to indigenous land, which only makes the problem worse because these people do have really horrible attitudes towards these people, which only makes the problem worse by putting them in close proximity.
Right.
Kyle, any thoughts on this?
We're just doing the same thing over and over and over again. How many times do we have to make the same mistakes before we do something different? And you know, like the...
What if they're not mistakes?
Yeah, well, you're right. What if they're the intentional actions of some evil motherfuckers?
Yeah, the...
Then
maybe it's $40 billion worth of mistakes if you're picking up what I'm putting down.
Right. On that note, though, I'm glad that I remember this was an issue for a different project back when I started university and even before that in high school. And it's just ramping up, right? Yeah. So we're clearly headed in a certain direction where, you know, what we were talking about earlier, like, get to a point of eco-terrorism.
You know, the police should take notice. There's a whole young generation of young indigenous men who are rediscovering their sacred purpose and rediscovering their ancestry. And right. And these are outright attacks on their purpose and their teleology in life. And I don't think the police realize what they're getting themselves into. They're going to be confronting an increasingly militant group of young indigenous men, and that's something I don't think the police are ready for.
No, more power to these people.
And you know the news is the people of Canada, we got your back.
Yes, yes.
Not the police.
Solidarity forever with the indigenous people fighting the good fight. And I touched on this at the beginning. It's sad that we have the people who are the most socioeconomically disadvantaged group, historically treated the worst in our continent. And they are the ones fighting for us all because climate catastrophe is going to destroy all of organized human existence, not just the white, the brown, the black, the red, or, you know, other people, women. It's going to be everybody. And it's going to collapse the entire environmental system that we've known because capitalism is a system premised upon infinite growth. And the only other thing I can think of that has that same ideology is a cancer cell, which believes absolutely. which believes in infinite growth. So I
cut
mean,
it out, cut it out.
Yeah, that's what you got to do is you got to cut the host.
Just to add on to that climate change point, I just read a New York Times article today. It's going to be colder in the Midwest today than it is in Antarctica. So, you know, there's developing stories every week. There's just another one for you.
And thank God Trump hit the Twitter sphere with another banger. Oh, it's cold in the Midwest. It's not climate change isn't real. Yet somehow that is not, you know, inciting violence, because I don't know what more violence will come out of climate denial than like the absolute collapse of
well, hopefully,
human life.
You know, dead homeless people in the streets of Chicago will wake some people up.
I think that, you know, we've built such a beautiful
facade.
Yeah, cognitive dissonant facade. And unfortunately, and we're gonna have to be talking about this character for a while now, Justin Trudeau only helps add to that problem. Right. You know, we had the
in a more polite way.
It's a guy that can talk out of both sides of his mouth. You know, he appeals to white liberals that are, you know, casually follow the news and think that, well, he's not overtly racist, so somehow that's a step up, even though his actions, he doesn't say racist things. Instead, he just does racist things like pushing indigenous people off their land.
Right.
And I think we need a little bit more show, don't tell in politics. And we need white liberals to kind of wake up to this fact that people like Trudeau are merely just trying to put a lid on and try to give a better glimpse of what is going on here and what's always been going on. And as we continue this broadcast, we'll be discussing Trudeau in not just in the internal Canadian affairs and our international affairs at home, because we do have people with their own sovereign nations, such as the Wet'suwet'en people, but comparing and contrasting how he, you know, speaks out, you know, says one thing but does the other at home, and how that same applies abroad, and what kind of connections we can make between the two. So we're going to have to take a short break for commercials, but after that, we'll be right back talking more Justin Trudeau. I will be right back in just 1 second.
What is disability insurance? 1 out of 10 Canadians wouldn't know how to answer this question. What's more troubling is that 3 out of 4 Canadians say that being unable to work for 3 months due to a disability would severely impact their personal finances. But getting covered is easier than you think. It generally only costs between 1% and 3% of your income, and insurance benefits can maintain your income as though you were still at work full-time. If you are a working person, then stay safe and get covered. Statistics courtesy of RBC Insurance.
It's not just rich people that own the media.
I own my 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 media.
The Media Co-op is a grassroots national news network that's owned by its members. Join us today at mediacoop.ca/join.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from NCA Musqueam territory. I'm here with my co-host, Ajit.
Bonjour.
And we're here with our very special guest, Kyle. Kyle, say hi to everybody, please.
Yo, yo.
And we'll be discussing Trudeau and China. So This has been in high politics. Of course, we're ultra intellectuals. And on this show, we only discuss what the most important of white people are up to all over the world. And right now, we are dealing with the firing of John McCallum. So this is an article from rabble.ca. So this is a fantastic website for progressive news. This was written by Carl Nirenberg yesterday, January 28th, 2019. The article reads, on Saturday, January 26th, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau fired his ambassador to China, John McCallum. Now, as Parliament resumes, the Prime Minister can expect some fairly harsh partisan attacks from his political rivals. Trudeau has had resisted calls to fire the ambassador after McCallum undiplomatically told a group of journalists he thought the case for extraditing Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou was weak. McCallum apologized for that statement, but then spoke out again, this time expressing the hope that the U.S. would drop its case against Meng. That was too much for the government. It is one thing to try too hard to curry favor with the Chinese and in so doing, undermine the independent Canadian judiciary. It is another to openly offend the Americans. China is still holding two Canadians on vague charges, and it is still officially planning to execute another. That Canadian Robert Schellenberg has just appealed his death sentence for drug dealing. For the time being, Canada will have no full-fledged ambassador to China. Career diplomat Jim Nickel, who had been McCallum's second-in-command, takes over as the chargé d'affaires, the top person when there is no accredited ambassador. The opposition parties, especially the Conservatives, will try to make political hay out of all of this, although politicizing a foreign policy imbroglio is not only unseemly, it could be dangerous. Conservative leader Andrew Scheer appears to think he can win points in a competition with Trudeau as to who's most competent to manage foreign policy. Good luck with that. Pretty good article detailing the events. So as we talked about earlier on the show, it was over a month ago.
It's been about a month.
The Huawei scandal. So for whatever reason, Huawei is now in the crosshairs of CSIS, of the Five Eyes spy network that is in charge of our spy agency. So I don't know what's scarier, Huawei or the Five Eyes people. I haven't really decided. And Huawei is I think the world's largest telecom giant, producing, you know, very affordable phones for the Chinese population. And of course, affordable phones, that's a big threat to Apple. Let's get rid of them.
It's not just phones. They're leading the world in terms of large city internet infrastructure for 5G. Right. They are carving literally carving a path forward at the leading edge of tech.
So they're not American or Canadian capital, and that means that we have to crush them. So once again, all you free market capitalists out there, that's a fairy tale. Nobody believes it, especially capitalists themselves. They don't care who has the best.
Neoliberals.
They are the sick authoritarians of their own countries, of which they can curry enough favor from their own idiotic population to believe that somehow we are superior. So that's basically what nationalism is. So we have Canadians pretending that, like, oh, we're somehow better than everybody else because we all, you know, live in this massive landmass that is like barely held together by, you know, a bunch of laws. And for whatever reason, that's supposed to make us, you know, throw away good technology like this, but even worse, we're supposed to get like close to the edge. We're talking like there's been a lot of jingoistic rhetoric around China and fighting China. Look, there's not gonna be a war against China. No. It's a nuclear superpower. That's absurd. We have a country of 36 million, 40 million people.
Right. Well, this is in line.
To a billion?
This is in line with their other narrative that the new frontier of war is cyber.
Yeah, so, the cyber war. Yeah,
not physical.
Yeah. But. Oh, I wonder what that is. Do you think Huawei's going to spy on us?
Is that
like
a war on terrorism, kind of?
It's the new manifestation, you know? Like,
just a war on something that you can't actually be fought.
How long until we find out that Huawei has WMDs and we need to evade their offices now?
God.
I made this comparison that it was basically, wow, because Meng Wanzhou is the daughter of the Huawei CEO, so like the biggest bigwig, the Tim Cook of basically. Well, I use this comparison of like Bill Gates. It's like basically stealing away Melinda Gates or like one of Bill Gates' kids.
She's the CFO.
Yeah, Meng Wanzhou is the CFO. I don't know what Melinda Gates has to do with Microsoft, but let's just make that.
You can make the comparison to his wealth, essentially.
Yeah,
she's second in command to his wealth. But yeah, exactly what you're saying.
But they're heroes. They're heroes in China. That's what's important. Is the Chinese people view them as people that are raising China's prestige and advancing the good of the people. And so like it's not just a political thing. Is we're actually directly. By putting her in, or by going through this, we're actually in many ways attacking the entire Chinese people. In a subtle way.
Well, the brainwashed ones.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the people who've drank the Chinese nationalist Kool-Aid, right? So it's like basically like I know what you mean though. It's kind of like how people have this weird attachment to Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos. Right.
They're social heroes.
Well, that's right? where the argument of white supremacy comes in, I think.
Oh yeah, so white supremacy. Ajit, you want to elaborate on the white supremacy comment about maybe some of the context surrounding that?
Well, wasn't it? I think the Chinese ambassador to Canada who said this whole fiasco is underpinned by this white supremacist insecurity in the West.
Wow, it's sad when they're so right, and you have to and you see the Canadians lining up to defend our horrible nation and say that we're not a bunch of white supremacists, even though we are engaging in white supremacy in the north of British Columbia, and you can witness it for yourself.
Right.
If you don't believe it, just go look at it. There's white people forcing Indigenous people off their own lands. Well, I don't know what a clearer cut thing of white supremacy that
Chinese
can be.
State is very racist too. Just to confirm, but yes, absolutely, we're no better.
Yeah, it's kind of like. You know, all I can see that from this is two, you know, it's like the two Spider-Man meme of like racists pointing at each other.
Oh, you're racist.
You're an evil authoritarian. No, you're an evil authoritarian. But for people who listen to Oppo on Canada Land, I suffer through it and have to listen to the liberal garbage on it. But I will say it's very interesting listening to Canadian politicians discuss it and pretend like China's this evil regime and this horrible authoritarian state where the people are suffering so dearly. And it's like, well, have you looked around Canada? I don't know what you call those people on the street. You know, I don't know what you're supposed to talk about them or all the people dying of the opioid crisis, mental health crises, climate crises at home. So it's just this next level cognitive dissonance that happens within like very powerful white brains.
And we raise this issue just because of the fact that we like to hold ourselves to this higher standard.
Yeah, God forbid we don't have homeless people here. God forbid. Oh, Spencer, you fairy duster, you loopy liberal. You know, you want everything for free. No, I just don't want people freezing to death in the freezing cold. But I guess I'm asking for too much. Yeah. Work or die, Karl Marx. So back to the article. This is a subheadline: Trudeau and Scheer agree on some foreign policy issues. On other foreign affairs, on another foreign affairs front, that of the current conflict between Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and self-declared president opposition leader Juan Guaido, Scheer and Trudeau are on the same page. They both refuse to recognize the legitimacy of Maduro's recent re-election. It is the NDP that is offside on Venezuela, although it does not have a clear unified position. A number of NDPers, notably Manitoba MP Nikki Ashton, have urged Canada to unequivocally support Maduro. But party leader Jagmeet Singh has tried to make a more nuanced approach. He has expressed the hope Venezuelans will figure things out for themselves. And he has, sorry for laughing, my bad. That's an editorial laugh. He has expressed the hope Venezuelans will figure things out for themselves, and he has pointedly refused to offer full-throated support to Venezuela's beleaguered president. Canada, let's not dogpile him. I know we all have lots of takes on Jagmeet. Back to the article. Canada has interests in Venezuela. It is in our hemisphere and is a major supplier of oil and minerals. But there are no Canadian lives in immediate peril there. China is a different story. Canada now finds itself uncomfortably astride a deepening rift between the U.S., Canada's closest neighbor and biggest trading partner, and the world's most populous country. Canadians in China are at immediate risk because of this conflict. The most are at risk at Schnellenberg and the two who were recently incarcerated. But there are many others who could face danger. It might be asking a lot, but Canadian politicians might think twice before turning Canada's current differences with China into a matter of partisan dispute. Politicians might all want to weigh their words very carefully before saying anything that can endanger the three Canadians at the eye of this political and diplomatic storm. So just to unpack the things that are going on there, I really like the way the author ended this piece because, you know, I would like to call myself a socialist, and I think that we rarely in our world think about the people who are affected by this. And don't get me wrong, I'm sure these people are, you know, have their ties into, they have their hands in the jar, so to speak, and that's why the Chinese state picked them amongst all the other Canadians that are there currently. I'm not saying they're
other all... Other than the drug dealer, I'm assuming.
Yeah, the drug dealer guy, it's a little bit
harder.
It's
more of a statement, I feel.
That one is definitely just being like, look what we're gonna do. You think you can
we
get
can
away
kill him, yeah.
Well, we're gonna kill him, and like that, and that just says more about the it's kind of weird to view China as a socialist state that executes workers. You know, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, I don't know if that's what Karl Marx was really trying to get at, but sure, I guess in your interpretation of capital.
When you have 1.4 billion people under your government, the strength of your nation is defined by the enforcement of its laws. If you don't enforce the laws at the foundation of your nation, that a nation of that size will crumble. So that there's some, there like just on a rational basis, you can see the need for some extra authoritative push around some laws. And you know they're killing Chinese drug dealers probably on a pretty regular basis.
Oh, no doubt.
And the workers. Before we get into a debate about who kills more or less people, I mean, like the RCMP kill indigenous men, you know, they don't care. They'll kill. They like our own security forces kill people.
Hint, hint. The state loves killing its own people.
Yeah, and all I'm trying to say is here that you look at our state, we kill our own people, and we look at the Chinese state and they kill their own people. So which is why, you know, We maybe the state is a bad idea. Ooh, hot take.
SSDD.
Yeah, let's try like rereading Capital. Xi, I think you missed the part where he said that you know, a good guy with the state can beat a bad guy with the state. anyways, let's just also compare the other main point, which is that Trudeau and Scheer are represent the two establishment wings. You know, it's two wings of the same bird. The NDP is kind of like the bird's droppings, so to speak, and like that's kind of like the leftover garbage that barely gets picked up by anybody because they're too milquetoasty for their own good.
Right. They're just faking at this point.
They are, and that's the thing, right? Like this is, and the author I think makes a really good point that this is all political theater to these people, right? It's all about like, oh, who can posture themselves around this issue. It's not like anyone really cares about the people involved in this issue. It's not like they really care about Meng Wanzhou. They're merely, you know, doing America's bidding just to, because America's trying to, you know, inflame the trade war with China because JP Morgan
Chase. That takes
Chase
away
Bank.
From our trade war.
Well, and JP Morgan, yeah, it takes away from the trade war we're having.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So that's the amount of political theater here, all the bluster around here, because they're all trying to cover up the serious problem, which is that capitalism is an inherently unstable system. There is a recession every 5 to 7 years on average.
What, and 26 people have more wealth than half the world combined.
Yeah. Quote Oxfam. Shouts out to Oxfam.
Yeah,
the real fam
crazy.
Out there, Oxfam.
That's crazy.
And what happens when the toys get passed around the circle of children and then a couple children keep taking all the toys for themselves? Well, there's no toys to go around. And then boom, next thing you know, the economy falls through the floor. Right. And who's left holding the bag? Well, the banks are probably going to try to do quantitative easing one more time and make some more money out of nowhere. And why this is important is that this political theater you can see right in front of you, this whole China, Huawei, 5G debate, it's all garbage. It has nothing to do with anything. The CIA spies on us anyway, so it's not like now our security is at risk. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, oh, which superpower is spying on us now? Is it the old superpower, USA, or is it going to be the new superpower, China? Right. Who's going to be spying on us?
Or even better, is it the white superpower, or is it the...
Oh, God, now we have an Asian authoritarian superpower? It's a million times worse now. It's, well, I mean...
It really is, just because of that fact in a lot of people's minds.
It is, right. 100%. They don't care that, like, the CIA spies on
no.
them. They absolutely don't care. It's because
George Tenet's watching me. That's fine.
When Snowden first came out, he talked about how the Five Eyes had a full dozen of programs called Smurf programs, and they were designed to give the perception that phones are off. Meanwhile, they're tracking and audio recording devices.
Absolutely.
This is a decade ago, yeah. Right? Like these they have the audacity to make those claims against other nations,
just to pretend. Because right. What I'm saying is that It's okay to say that Huawei is spying on people. I agree. They are spying on people. It's just silly to pretend like you care now when you don't care that it's already happening.
Right, right.
It's absurd and it's obtuse. And I'm glad that we at the show see through it. And I hope you at home can see through this, because we don't need people really piling in on this whole China is bad dog pile. It's pretty obvious.
No,
have you seen a Foxconn factory? That's all you got to know about that country, okay?
Right.
There's no workers' paradise. This is not an orthodox Marxist utopia where the workers own the means of production. Let me just say that until there is world revolution, just like was, I don't know, laid out in Capital,
right.
If you read it the first time, it's going to end up in these sick authoritarian regimes. So, you know, our libertarian socialist society is very far away from happening anytime soon. The other point brought up was the NDP and Jagmeet Singh. So, and Venezuela. So we're going to take this opportunity just to begin our transition onto the Venezuela topic. Foreign policy, as we've seen, when it refers to China, is generally, what is the U.S. up to? Well, we'll just follow that blindly, and we don't really care what the effects are for our people, which is, you know, we're going to not only be left out of the whole China free trade agreement, which is neither free nor trade and is merely just capitalists trying to make even more money. So, I mean, like, whatever. It doesn't really bother me. I know that people in Canada will be choked. And then on top of that, we have the next issue, which is we have our two wings on the same bird, Trudeau and Scheer, posturing around this, more or less represent the status quo. I mean,
Singh too, let's be honest.
Well, yeah, now we have Singh, who is basically trying to say, what is the one position I can have on things that means nothing to nobody? So I garner no hate. But I also garner no support.
Literally no support.
Yo, may I add something here?
Yeah, absolutely.
In Dante's Inferno, there was the bulk of humanity was neither too good to get into heaven or too bad to get in hell. And they sat on the doorstep of hell getting stunned by bees and waving banners with no emblems. And, you know, there's nothing worse than people who won't pick a side.
Mm.
And so, this, like, you know, you got to pick a side and commit.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Maybe.
You know, these wishy-washy politicians, man. Oh.
Well, here's maybe a policy of dealing with China. Well, how about we adopt the good things about China, such as a real climate policy, like their policy for an ecological civilization? How about, and then, you know, that would be great if we could, I don't know, do something about climate change here. Let's do something about the bad things that China does, like, I don't know, imprison people for no reason, execute people for no reason, have horrible conditions for their workers.
You mean currency manipulation?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, they're stealing stuff. We steal stuff, dude. Shut up. It's like, this would be a really good opportunity for everybody that really hates China to be like, yeah, I hate China so much. I'm going to revolutionize our workplaces and we're going to return the workplace to the workers. Oh, wait, you're just grandstanding and posturing and trying to use some like weird orientalist slurs against the Chinese to support your own, even though we basically mirror their system, their capitalist system.
Seriously, you know, the propaganda that they used against the Japanese in World War II could just be reborn today, and people it wouldn't be out of place at all.
Oh no,
you know, like they just been slandering, like I don't know, they just anyway.
It's like the Red Scare again.
Yeah.
Oh, the Chinese are watching you. It's like, oh, the Kremlin's watching me again, or is it like one time they're gonna slip up and say the Kremlin's watching you instead of saying Beijing is watching you? It's gonna happen.
You know, the boogeyman.
They also have 1.4 billion people to watch as well. So there's only so many watchers.
Oh, I think that's who they watch the most.
Well, I mean, for us, they'll have to create like
that's a lot of watchers doing the watching.
Well, what they're well, they have the office for spying on the Chinese citizens, and then they have a little portable to spy on the Canadian citizens, because there's 40 million or less of us to keep track of.
We're not even like a city.
No.
Just think the sheer amount of paranoia Chinese leaders live in. The fact that they worry that their own workers are just going to want to institute the second revolution.
Wow. And on that note, we're going to leave it there, because that is the fear I want our politicians to be living under, too, of a workers' revolution. So we're going to have to take a short break for commercials, but after that, we'll be right back.
I faced it. I have Alzheimer's disease. My diagnosis has let me get on with my life my way.
The more we learned about my grandfather's dementia, the more we could face the future and make plans.
My husband, Tom, and I spoke to our doctor right away.
I have Alzheimer's, but it doesn't have me.
I faced it. So can you.
For more information about early diagnosis, visit alzheimer.ca.
Three women, dressed in lingerie, were hanging from the ceiling on meat hooks. In an adjacent room, a man was in bed with two deceased females, also wearing lingerie. He positioned their arms in a sexy embrace. Down the hall, a man holding a chainsaw stood over the motionless body of a sixth woman, lying on a table covered in plastic. These are scenes from a popular music video by a Grammy Award-winning artist. If we want violence against women to stop, shouldn't we stop treating it like entertainment? Join the conversation at #NotOkay.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from Unceded Musqueam Territory. I'm with my co-host, Ajit.
Hello.
And we're with our special guest, Kyle.
Whoop, whoop.
And now we're discussing Canada and Venezuela. Ooh. This is what I predict to be the new Iraq situation. I can guarantee that there will be some kind of bizarre conspiracy theory that is drummed up by the U.S. Intelligence agencies, some similar to Russiagate, but like a lot more insidious, because every time they seem to be in trouble, they come up with some wild,
oh, don't
wild
worry,
shit.
Russia's involved.
Russia is involved. And see, the thing is that we can't even have an honest discussion about why Russia is involved, but it has to devolve into some weird WMD, Russia, DNC hack.
Cold War.
China, climate change is a Chinese hoax. Like, all these wild magical thinking.
Russia should just put some Iskander missiles in Venezuela just to shake things up a little bit.
Yeah, so all jokes aside, though,
I think that's what the Pentagon really wants.
We're looking at a World War III kind of scenario here, because
proxy war.
Well, it's going to be, you thought Syria was bad because that was the latest Russian-American proxy war. Right. But this one is looking like, we have Jair Bolsonaro, who we talked about on the show last year when he was elected, and he is more or less the Hitler of Brazil. He is an open fascist and has said that he's going to kill the socialist scum in Venezuela. Mm. So I interpret that to what you mean.
Super racist.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, he's an ultra-racist. Yeah. Anti-indigenous, anti-black person, and I don't know if anyone's ever seen pictures of Maduro supporters, but they're a lot darker than
indigenous.
Yeah. Ooh, weird. So wait, the indigenous people are under attack in Venezuela too, not just in Canada and the U.S. and everywhere else they exist?
It's a new world project.
Worldwide.
It's almost like colonialism started and never stopped.
So. Arguably, Australia
like
is leading the charge.
Yeah, Australia and New Zealand, they're very good at that stuff. So the article by Brent Patterson and Rabble.ca, fantastic website, everyone should check it out, from today, it's the headline is, Trudeau plays willing partner to Trump's attempted coup in Venezuela. The Trudeau government has played a key role in supporting an attempted coup in Venezuela while also presenting itself as a facilitator with the Lima Group to resolve the political crisis it has helped exacerbate. On January 23rd, National Assembly President Juan Guaido declared himself the interim president of Venezuela in a bid to oust President Nicolas Maduro. A recent news article reads, quote, emboldening Venezuela's opposition has been a labor of months, the Canadian press has learned, end quote. That article adds, quote, Canadian diplomats in Caracas, with their Latin American counterparts, worked to get the country's opposition parties to coalesce behind the one person who emerged strong enough to stand against Maduro, 35-year-old Guaido, end quote. Steve Elner, a former professor at the Universidad de Oriente in Venezuela, recently commented on Democracy Now, quote, it's true that Maduro's popularity has decreased, but the opposition is also very unpopular, end quote. Elner highlights, quote, that's because the opposition lacks a program. At least it hasn't publicized its program. It has a program. It's a neoliberal program, end quote. The deeply ideological position of the Trump administration is clear. The Canadian press report also notes, quote, Guaido made a clandestine trip to Washington by secretly crossing his country's border with Colombia in mid-December to brief U.S. officials on a strategy for dealing with Maduro's January 10th inauguration, end quote. Just a few months earlier, in September 2018, The Guardian quoted U.S. President Donald Trump stating his view on what could be done in Venezuela, quote, it's a regime that, frankly, could be toppled very quickly by the military if the military decides to do that, end quote. Trump told the United Nations General Assembly at that time, quote, not long ago, Venezuela was one of the richest countries on earth. Today, socialism has bankrupted the oil-rich nation and driven its people into abject poverty.
Hint, hint, it's not socialism.
Ajit, how dare you interrupt me in the middle of this article? Don't you know that socialism doesn't work? Every time socialism is attempted, the CIA creates a coup.
Oh, this is exhibit A for the capitalists.
Socialism debunked.
Right.
So back to the article. Trump's attack on socialism obscures the impact of the punitive sanctions that U.S. President Barack Obama, liberal hero, hello liberals, listen, Barack Obama, a Barack Obama alert, imposed against Venezuela in 2015. Alfred de Zayas, an American lawyer and the former secretary of the United Nations Human Rights Council, has recommended that the International Criminal Court review those sanctions as possible crimes against humanity under the Article 7 of the Rome Statute. Now the Trump administration has imposed additional sanctions on Venezuela's state-owned oil company that could cost Venezuela about $11 billion in oil revenue this year. Venezuela is economically vulnerable to this given 41% of its oil's exports go to the U.S. It's crazy how socialism is the reason why Barack Obama put those sanctions on there in the first place. Let's see what else socialism did to these people, right?
Right. They're trying to create this causal link that there's economic catastrophe because there's socialism. But they never ask the question. They never look more in depth in there. And of course, like every country, you know, just going over a quick fact, I think every major country in South America has elected a socialist.
Yeah, and then the U.S. has shown up and killed them.
Right, so that weird. I think the link is more... Well, a lot of them they haven't killed. A lot of them have just gone into power because either they're, you know, not true socialists or because, you know, the catastrophe is a good preliminary step to blaming socialism mm-hmm. in their minds. I mm-hmm. think that's what they really like.
Just to take a step back for a second, socialism, broadly defined, is democratic control of the economy, the workplace. Not only do you get to vote in political matters, you also get to vote in your job, and the workers control the means of production. That is generally what we're looking at in socialism. So when you discuss the United Soviet, the USSR, let's just say that the workers were not in control of the means of production.
And let's say this. You call Venezuela a socialist country under Hugo Chavez.
30% public sector, 70% private sector. And not socialism.
Even more importantly, he was authoritarian, yeah. which is a direct contradiction of what socialism is.
Yeah, it's actually socialism is the opposite of authoritarianism. Capitalism,
purest form of democracy.
Yeah, capitalism is literal authoritarianism. It's authoritarianism in the workplace, and socialism is trying to become the opposite of that. Right. Kyle, any thoughts on this whole Venezuela ordeal?
Well, We're in an era of rapid energy descent. My understanding is that by 2035, the planet breaches a 1-to-1 net energy profit ratio for liquid fuels. So, like, the any nation that has substantial reserves of energy that can be extracted.
I just checked Wikipedia, Kyle.
Yeah, like,
and Venezuela is at the top of the list for oil reserves. Do you think that has anything to do with this coup?
Well, Libya, Iran, Venezuela,
Iraq. Do they all have oil?
Any country with oil is
Are we connecting the dots?
Right. Is in the crosshairs of some big ass military artillery.
Whoa.
are you saying that their incentive is to pump as much oil as possible in the next 16 or so years?
Well, no. Oil is liquid hegemonic power, provides a net energy surplus for a complex society. So nations like that, literally complex nations, literally depend upon continual supplies of energy.
A fossil fuel, yeah.
And Venezuela just happens to have a shit ton.
Arguably,
arguably, it's in a really hard to extract form, but it's there nonetheless.
There, no matter what,
yeah. I think the United States will figure out how to get it out of the ground.
Drill, baby, drill.
Are you suggesting that the United States is not intervening in Venezuela to support democracy, but is there instead just to extract oil from them?
Well, it's probably a dual purpose. They're probably also trying to just crush the people like they do everywhere else on the planet.
Yeah, just to take a look at
that's
picture.
Just an externality.
Take
right?
a look at the pictures, people, for yourselves. Look at Guaido supporters and tell me how light their skin is, and then look at Maduro supporters and tell me how dark their skin is.
Just call them a Guido.
Guido.
I think that's more appropriate.
Terrible.
Like, I'm surprised this guy's still alive, to be honest.
Maduro?
No, Guido.
Guido?
Guido. Well, I mean, I'm sure he doesn't move around without 50 men.
Well, he had to do some illegal immigration, which Trump didn't seem to mind when he illegally crossed into the Colombian border.
Did you hear about how John Bolton had that catastrophe where he showed at an interview, it was caught by a journalist, where he had a notepad that said 5,000 troops to Colombia. So John Bolton's National Security Advisor.
Right.
So the media has just been in a frenzy over this. Is are there 5,000 troops already in Colombia, or are we sending 5,000 troops to Colombia?
And for those of us,
I mean the United States, not Canada.
Well, we as in we're going to be all stuck in the disaster that becomes this. But, so yeah, it is we international solidarity, people.
We're going to follow the people.
Well, yeah, Canada's going to get roped into this. All the people of Venezuela are going to apply for asylum and have to leave their countries, and we're going to have to have a massive migration crisis from this. And also for people from the United States of Amnesia, John Bolton was instrumental in orchestrating the conspiracy theory and the eventual greatest humanitarian disaster of the 21st century, which was the Iraq War. So far, America's looking to top that in Venezuela. And this guy still has a job, even though he orchestrated the worst crime against humanity this century has seen.
He's still alive.
How wild is that? Right. No one's assassinated him. That's pretty incredible for John and his silly mustache.
You got a whole bunch of evil characters all over the planet doing all sorts of shenanigans. And you know, TikTok.
Hey, why do they live? They put walls outside their house, not because they're scared of the people outside, because they love the people inside.
Yes,
very good quote from our current president.
We do. That's how you show love, is by building a wall. I'll build a wall around us, baby. Trump to millennia. So to round out this connection to Canada, the article reads, it's in this context that the CBC reports, quote, Canada will host members of the Lima Group of South and Central American countries next Monday, February 4th in Ottawa, in an effort to find a resolution to the turmoil in Venezuela, Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland said on January 28th. Along with Canada, the Lima Group includes Brazil, Colombia, Guatemala, Honduras, Peru, and eight other Latin American countries. The CBC article adds the move comes days after Canada recognized Juan Guaido, the Venezuelan opposition leader, as interim president of the country and rejected Nicolas Maduro's government as autocratic and illegitimate. Along with Canada and the United States, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, and Israel have recognized Guaido as the interim president. I'm just gonna take a break there. So we have a lot to unpack there, and as we've talked about on the show earlier, looks like we won't have time to get to the rest of this. So we'll finish our roundtable discussion here. So we've discussed the history of Canada's imperial past and present, which is basically going into countries with large mining interests. Turns out Venezuela has some gold mines. Turns out Canada has Goldcorp. I wonder if that has anything to do with anything. As well, we recall how the Honduran migrant caravan was caused by, in part, by the United States and Canada as they supported the military coup of the milquetoast liberal government, who's just merely suggested they raise the minimum wage, as that was completely unpalatable to business interests, and they overthrew his ass real quick, threw him out, and then Canada supported that coup, triggering that immigration crisis. And it seems that we're going to see the same thing happening here in Venezuela. On top of that, if you look at the countries that are involved in this, so we have Brazil, fascist leader, Jair Bolsonaro, Colombia, far-right leader, Guatemala, far-right leader, Honduras, far-right leader. Are we seeing a trend here? And then we look at the other people who recognized Guaido. We have Chile, far-right place, and Israel, far-right place, that are recognizing Guaido. So what we can see internationally from this is Canada's support for far-right dictatorships in other countries merely to support their own resource extraction business, mainly mining, exactly, partially oil, but also supporting a political project of forcing the neoliberal shock doctrine on these people. Right. Ajit, any thoughts?
No, I mean, just like what you said, this is the potential to be the Iraq War 3.0. I say 3.0 because the...
there was a first Gulf War.
There was, correct. Absolutely. And come on, people. We spent so long realizing the truth about Iraq. Like, let's not be eased into this.
Litmus test. If you support this shit, you're done. You're dead to me as a lefty. Just go sit with the stupid liberals. Right. Go sit with the free speech club here.
Maybe this is how they want to, you know, kickstart the business cycle again. This is how we get the recession going. You know, we got a little marginal surplus. Let's rack up the credit card debt, and you know, there we go. Then we can restart the business cycle, and it fits back into their plans. You know, that's obviously very full blown, but you know, the main point is exactly what you said. It's to benefit the most slim segments of society. It doesn't concern us. It should concern us as a humanitarian issue. Nothing beyond that.
Yes.
Well, you know, Libya was completely destroyed under humanitarian pretenses.
All right.
You know, let's not forget that the track record of these people is that they just go into nations and completely gut entire nations and destroy entire peoples for the profit of a small minority of super rich people.
So it's the neoliberalization of war almost.
You know, there's the profit incentive with the military industrial complex. There's the drug incentive with the manufacture of narcotics.
Absolutely.
There's the mining and oil and then there's the other idea of just putting down people that are going to show some resistance.
Right. You got to help your rich pals. Mm-hmm.
The,
right?
the moment a unified people emerges, they put them down.
Yeah, especially since Gaddafi was trying to come up with a non-U.S. backed African currency to, God forbid, unite the African continent. Wow. Bashar al-Assad wanted to do the same thing in Syria, and then he gets invaded. Venezuela dropped the dollar, and now they're getting invaded. Hmm.
You know, what happened in Libya put Africa back arguably 300 years. It's one of the greatest tragedies of this century. Right. Yeah, but you know that. But that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, it's the same with Iraq and the Middle East. Iraq and Syria were the two strongest nations, two nations that have really built a strong society, and that was absolutely destroyed by the United States. Venezuela has the gall to own their own oil and use the profits of the resource extraction, which is, you know, ironically enough, going to kill off the planet. So if that's going to inform any socialism, we can't have a socialism that's oil based. So there you go. Sorry, right. Oil people. You
and this
can't
is gonna
be
kick
part
off
of socialism.
This is going to kick off another crisis too. Let's not forget that either.
Oh, yeah, weird. The same people the same people who hate migrants love this coup. Weird. Weird. I just want to kind of point the cognitive dissonance, magical thinking, up is down is up. Logic of these people should never be, you know, understated, but we're bigger than hypocrite, you know, we're bigger than hypocrisy shaming people. We are trying to fully understand their project, which is basically the neoliberalization of Canada, where we gut the people for profit. We exploit them needlessly. We exploit indigenous people for profit here. And then a abroad, we exploit war and famine and disasters that we help create, like in Venezuela, Libya, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, all those places that we look for to destroy so that we can make quick bucks out of it, just as like Kyle was talking about. So that the logic that we use to make money in our everyday businesses here and our resource extraction here is the same one that informs how we do war, how we do diplomacy abroad, like in China. We're expecting just to be able to force down their throats the same kind of neoliberal garbage we force on everyone else. And guess what? The Chinese don't take it. So that's now apparently why we should hate China, is that they won't give in to our hegemony in North America. That's all the time we have tonight, unfortunately. I felt a fantastic time having our special guest, Kyle, here. So, Kyle, thank you so much for coming out.
Thanks for having me. I'll try not to swear as much next time.
That's okay. That's why we have a
late show. I just hate the rich people. Man.
Power to the people. Yeah, we are an anti-rich.
Gotta get it out.
We are unfortunately classist here. We pride ourselves on not being racist, sexist, homophobic, or any of those bad things. But I will say, we do hate rich people. So thank you so much for listening. You can check us out on Apple iTunes podcast if you want to hear more and you want to hear how right we were about the Huawei case. Ajit and I nailed it back then, so very proud of that. You're going to be listening to Stranded, some more fantastic programming from CITR, and that's all from us tonight. Have a wonderful evening.
What is disability insurance? 1 out of 10 Canadians wouldn't know how to answer this question. What's more troubling is that 3 out of 4 Canadians say that being unable to work for 3 months due to a disability would severely impact their personal finances. But getting covered is easier than you think. It generally only costs between 1% and 3% of your income, and insurance benefits can maintain your income as though you're still at work full time. If you are a working person, then stay safe and get covered. Statistics courtesy of RBC Insurance.
Hi, this is Portia from Pale Res, live from the first night of Music Waste at Fortune Sound Club. You're listening to CITR Radio, 101.9 FM. I'm redoing this because I'm a little bit mad to say this, but Miles deleted the one I did before. It was better than this.